Caution, the Mark Unger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience. And besides that, he's really weird. Welcome to the Mark Unger Show with international marriage speaker and author of Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage, Mark Unger. This is your source for practical, down-to-earth marriage advice without all the over-spiritualization or romantic nonsense. And now the host of the Mark Unger Show, Mark Unger.
And the crowd goes wild with delirious joy. They've joined the Mark Unger Show, the show that deals with all things concerning...
Marriage.
Indeed, I'm your host, the one, the only Mark Unger. Joining me is always the ever-lovely Lady Diane and the amazing Philip James Gunger. Engineering the show, as always, the very talented but eerily creepy Timothy Robert Ray. Pushing buttons, twisting knobs, and trying to stay awake during this incomprehensibly, immeasurably boring show. This is a show that handles your marital challenges, relational conundrums, and dating dilemmas that you can email to us at ask@markgungor.com. We have Daniel Sutton on camera again today. Daniel Sutton! How you doing, Daniel? He's a quiet soul over there.
Because he doesn't have a mic.
I don't think he wants to get in these arguments with us.
I don't want to get into it.
He just wants to get in here.
Get out!
All right, what do you got there?
Get out. Okay, three phrases to never say to your husband.
You smell.
Nope. First one. What were you thinking? The truth is, this phrase is demeaning when said to anyone. It layers pain on top of humiliation. Let's be honest. The translation of this phrase is, you weren't thinking. But although we may not see it immediately, most guys think things through and have legitimate reasons for what they do, just like we do. The problem for us is that we don't know that they have already thought it through because, unlike us women, they usually don't think it through by talking it through.
Do you think that's insulting, Phil?
What were you thinking?
I don't think that's insulting. Maybe it's because I often ask myself.
What was I thinking?
I don't know that I'm asked that very often.
Oh, I get it a lot. What? What were you thinking? I don't know. Okay. I get that.
I have heard from men that it is highly insulting to them. Right, I have heard that.
I used to be a man. All right.
Okay. The second one.
I know men.
I know guys who are men. So, I've.
Maybe you're just not men. Maybe that's why you're not ringing bells with
us. I'm a girly man. All right.
Okay. Second phrase. You didn't do a good job at
fill in the blank. That would sting.
Mm-hmm. So instead of, what do they say at the bottom? Instead of moving things around or redoing it and not having, you talk about that with the frying pan and frying your eggs and all of that. that's highly insulting and it hurts men's feelings because it questions whether they're good at it because that's their big question in life. Am I good at what I do? So when you do that, it's stepping on that for them.
I have versions of that, but not that phrase. Mm-hmm. I tend to be very self-deprecating by nature, so... I'm the one asking myself some of these questions. But when I have people challenge my thinking and stuff, I get real ticked, you know? So, but.
I feel like the phrase that, Shanti, the one above, back when we go back to what were you thinking?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If my wife were to say, I know you had a reason. Can you help me understand?
Yeah.
Is that what they were suggesting you should do instead?
That's way more offensive to me than, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
I'm sure that this must have made sense to you at some point. Could you bring me in the process to help me understand how this...
I think that's brilliant. What a great way to say something. She says that to you like that?
No, this is what Shanti Veldhan is saying you should do instead.
Oh, I thought you said your wife says that to you.
No, instead of saying, what were you thinking? She says you're supposed to politely ask, I know you had a reason. Can you help me understand?
I don't think that's insulting at all.
To me, that's way worse.
I have a phrase.
I would just start laughing right away.
How about this one? What the? Were you thinking? Yeah. Is that what insulted?
No, that wouldn't insult me either. No?
Because to me, what were you thinking is a question that I don't think she really wants to know the answer.
Let me tell you why I don't think it's insulting. Because at that point, it's been proven that you failed. It's obvious. Mm-hmm. Something bad happens. What the heck were you thinking? It's not offensive to me, because clearly at this point, right. it's evident. So well, that's why I don't think it's insulting. Now, if it's not failed, or you don't know what you're doing.
I think that's what she's
like
talking about.
The decisions
about,
we were talking about last night with yes. Deb, and if Sarah said, you know, you don't know what you're doing, and you know, of course, at that point, I probably felt like that too, but that's different. You know, I'm doing this, and how do you really know what you're saying? That would make me mad. But yeah. when you get to the point where something's an obvious disaster, for example, the hot tub is on fire.
Yes.
Because of something I did.
Yes.
And says, what were you thinking? I think it's really rather appropriate at this point.
I think that she's talking about the minor things. You know, like you let the kids stay up past bedtime. It's like they're supposed to be in bed. What were you thinking? It's those kinds of things. And those are the men that I have heard from that when the wives
okay,
do
okay,
that.
Okay, because then it's not...
It's not critical.
No,
it's
no, no.
Just,
but it's not obvious that something is bad at this point.
It's not their standard. It's not just the wife's standard.
Okay, I get it.
So now are we clear?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
clearly,
yeah.
if it's a debacle, then that's a fair question.
No, no. Because usually that's when I get the question is
right. No, but there's a
in the
lot
debacle
of,
stage.
Right.
And I don't find it insulting because it's clearly a debacle.
No.
But when it's not a
it's
debacle,
the, in the day to day, just so because he didn't do the, it the way you wanted.
Okay, so
it.
The non-rhetorical version of it. Yours is just a rhetorical.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thinking.
Perfect. Not,
yeah. I thought I was going to light it on fire.
Or I say something in a sermon and someone goes, you know, what were you thinking? Why would you say that? I said, yes. Why? People think it was fine. Yes. See, that would make me more
yes.
defensive.
And you all didn't right. do a good job at, well, you know, driving and we went off the edge of the cliff. That's fairly obvious. Yeah.
It's like really the context. If
you
it's
didn't
clear.
Do a good job of making the bed, well. Yes. You know, then that's petty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This
Diane
is what
for
she's explaining this to us.
Speaking
thank
about.
You, Diane.
Okay, you're welcome.
Now I'm offended.
Okay.
Now, I'm
now you'll just learn to be offended by all of this.
We're very ticked now.
Okay, and the final one is not a phrase, it's a sigh of exasperation. This placed in front of any words or on its own is like a knife. As you can infer from the findings discussed above, a man's greatest emotional need is to feel that you respect, appreciate, admire, and believe in him. Sighs of exasperation say exactly the opposite. You would never look at this man we love and say out loud, you're an idiot or you're incompetent, although there are women who do say that.
I don't know. I'm just telling you, I'm not offended by either all three of these. All three, in most contexts, to me, would make me laugh. Because if I do something totally fragile as my wife, I would rather her just go instead of keeping inside or dancing yeah. around issues and stuff like that. I do that to a lot of people. I believe I've had a few of those come from you.
Sighs? Yeah. I have to say, I do not like to be sighed at.
Really?
It really, I don't even like to hear people sigh. That's like when you sigh, I'm like, did you hear me the other day? I'm like, quit your sighing. Just because.
I was sighing. Leave me alone.
I know. I'm like, stop sighing. I don't even like that.
Get back, witch. All right.
I don't like
difference.
That.
Okay, so don't do those three things to your yes. husband.
Yeah,
although
be nice.
I gotta say, I don't think it really would bother me. It just would depend on the context is everything.
Yes, and it depends on the person because, like I say, I have heard from men that that's a really big issue for them. Yeah, no, all of
it.
Those things.
I get it. All right.
Okay, got it.
All right. All
get it.
Big,
got it. Good.
All you big babies out there, don't do that to your husband because he's a big baby. Mm-hmm. All right, we will be back with your emails right after this.
Download your free Mark Gunger app today to see all of the latest from the world of Mark Gunger.
Hi, Mark Gunger here talking to you about Transition One, our one-year transition program here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, that is designed to help young people, young Christian people. And I want to stress that. This isn't a program for juvenile delinquents. Mm-hmm. You got a kid who's a mess. Man, don't send them to us. I'm talking about devout Christian kids. They finish high school, and before they go into college, they take a one-year program. There's several of these around the country. We have one here in the Mark Gunger world called Transition One. We launched this last year, and it's been fabulous. I mean, it's really wonderful, and these kids have been dramatically affected by this in a wonderful way. We teach them about life. We focus on how to live, how to make decisions, how to plan, how to date, how to make choices for spouses, how to do all these things. And we show them how to serve, and we give them service opportunities and teach them to put God first in their lives. The last 3 months of the program, they go on a missions trip, not one of these, you know, 7-day And God bless those who do that. I mean, I still think they're great, but those are more of a vacation. When you go on a real missions trip and you're there for months, you really learn stuff and it really changes you and you really get to understand and really, if nothing else, to appreciate what you have here. Believe it or not, there's places in the world that they don't have Wi-Fi in every corner of your world. You know, life is different. There's not a McDonald's on every corner. There's not, you know, 3,000 television channels. There's places where, quite frankly, none of that stuff exists, and you haven't a chance to really see these kids grow and mature. When they come back, I'm telling them their lives will be changed forever. And then let them go on and pursue their lives. Jesus taught us, if you will seek first my kingdom, I'll add all these things to you. You parents who just try to get your kids to go get these things right away, as that's the top priority, you're making a terrible, in my opinion, a terrible mistake. Slow down. Take a year. Put God first in the lives of your children. Encourage them to do so. Go check out our website. We'll tell you all about our program, transitionone.org. That's transitionone.org.
She got long blonde hair and a sweet disposition. You ought to see what she does in the kitchen. Grits and gravy, chicken too. My baby even cooks me barbecue. I love my baby. Yeah, I love my baby. Yeah, I love my baby. And my baby loves me.
Jimmy Roger! He should have me singing on his record. Maybe not. Check out his music at jimmybratcher.com. All right, what do you got?
Okay, first email from a guy. He says, my wife has lost the in love feeling for me.
We've lost that love and feeling.
She misplaced it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that love. Okay.
I stopped just for you because I knew you'd do that. She says it has slowly faded for the last few years. They're married 14 and a half years, by the way. And she just noticed that it's gone about a year ago. She started talking to a mutual acquaintance of ours that she gained feelings for.
Oh, that's it.
We have gone to marriage counseling, including, which I don't even know what this is, discernment counseling. She doesn't know if she wants the feeling back for me. This all happened because I worked too much and wasn't at home to help her with the household duties, the kids, and give her quality time. I have turned myself around and want nothing more than to make her happy. He wants to know, can your flag page system help us? And any advice would be greatly appreciated. She says that she has no desire to go on a date with me or be at all intimate with me. She doesn't feel connected. She doesn't know who I am. I don't sleep in the same bed with her. She's comfortable talking to me and being in the same room as me. We are like roommates, she says. She just has no desire or connection to be close or snuggle.
What is discernment counseling?
I have no idea.
Is that a Christian thing? It sounds like a Christian thing. Psycho-Christian thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're pseudo-psycho or actual Christian people, then don't you have, like, a problem with the adultery aspect? I'm connecting with another man, and I like this other man better than you.
Perhaps she thinks that that's the one that God
that
sent to
God's
be her
will.
Soulmate.
So because when God said, do not commit adultery, she gets a pass on that.
Well, that's why they have to discern these feelings.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm sorry. I feel bad for you. That kind of mess you're in is not fixed by emailing some guy. Some psycho guy who has a podcast or on the TV or radio, whatever. So clearly you need some counseling, but how's this not an easy thing to counsel through? I mean, they need to reconnect. He gets that. I think the flag page could help. But if her heart is hardened or she doesn't even want to try, I get that she doesn't want to try. You know, there's times where you actually get to life and you don't want to try.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to do the right thing. I've been there more often than I care to admit. And for a variety, there's days I don't want to pastor anymore. There's days I don't want to do much of anything anymore. There's days I just want to quit and just run off to Bonga Bonga land somewhere. Okay, fine. But I know I can't stay there. So I got to pull myself out of it. And if I need to talk to somebody, and I've done that. And gotten counseled and prayed for and kind of got back on track. Because I know what's the right thing to do. Your wife clearly must know that being disgusted to, doesn't want to be touched by her husband and would rather talk to some other guy. Clearly, that's in the wrong category. She needs to address that. So, you know, the fact that he wants to fix it, I think it's fine, it's good. And And they both did something wrong. One is he was never around, mm-hmm. and two, she went to get comfort from another man. I mean, you can't do that. Mm-mm. That happened to anybody.
Discernment counseling isn't spiritual. I should have. Oh, my bad. Okay. I should have looked this up ahead of time. I just assumed.
You're fired.
Apparently, it's focused on not solving the marital problems, but seeing if they could work out. Do they need to go into deeper counseling? Are they going to try separation? Is divorce an option? So it's sort of just laying everything out there. Right. Is the way that I'm reading this.
It sounds like they're trying to discern whether or not it's right or wrong or fixable.
It helps couples with divorce ambivalence. So whether
ambivalence, you don't care.
Like you're not certain whether you should divorce. You don't know. So it's
sounds
it
weird
seems
to
weird
me.
To me.
Yeah,
seems very
so
weird to me.
We don't know that they're Christian people at all.
No,
we don't. I mean, if you are, I would say you need to quit going to divorce ambivalence counseling and go to a pastor or somebody who can address you guys in a proper way. If you're Christians, if you're not, then you're on your own. I don't have any help for you. I mean, clearly. She's in a very, very bad place.
Yeah, it says, unlike traditional marriage or relationship counseling that assumes both people are willing to work on the marriage, this kind of counseling helps people decide whether to work on their marriage or keep moving towards ending the relationship.
To me, that sounds like a horrible step.
Yeah?
It sounds like a horrible step. But, you know, we're going to do this counseling that I don't know if I want to work on this anymore.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't have any help for you at that point. That's a sad place to be. The only thing I would think at some point, you can't live by your feelings. If you live by your feelings, you'll be a disaster. You have to have the set of values. As a Christian, I have a set of values that overshadows my feelings. So I keep, at times, ignoring my feelings and lining up with the values. Even if you're not a Christian, you don't have to be a Christian to have values.
Right.
You know, you think at some point, my value is my husband, my marriage, my children.
But if she's all tangled up in her head emotionally with this other guy, all of that flies out the window. Because well, that's what happens.
Not necessarily.
You lose your values. Contrary to everything that you believe in.
No, I just say this. I don't think she has values, or she needs to get back to her values. There are times where I want to give up everything, I think, because emotionally I'm just not there. But it doesn't erase my values. My values are still my values. I feel contrary to my values. And I have to face that.
And there's people who act contrary to.
And sometimes they act contrary to that, but even still they're faced with, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. I need to get back to my values. The question I would have to your wife is, what are her values? Does she have any values? And if she does, she needs to line back up with that in spite of how she feels. Now, that's not hip counseling today.
No,
because in our psychobabble world today, is your feelings are the most important thing. You have to be honest with how you feel and how do you really feel inside. And it's all a pile of horse manure as far as I'm concerned. People who listen to their feelings end up being disasters in life. People who succeed in life don't listen to their feelings by and large. Your feelings come and go. What drives them is their set of values, their goals, their ambitions. Take into business. Who in the world wants to build a business? You got to work 18 hours a day, and there's days where everything goes wrong and nothing's working. And why do they keep driving? They don't listen to how they feel. Mm-hmm. They set their goals. They've got their values. That's what you that you need something that guides you. You know, I fly airplanes. You know, if you get off course, you've got to zero in on a radio frequency or something and go to that. You don't just go, oh, I don't know where I am, and step out of the airplane, you know? Even as on a boat, you know? They got these nav things and the waterways and stuff. If you lose your way, you have to focus on what you know is a solid place. There's that lighthouse. The lighthouse is always there. And you key off the lighthouse to get back where you need to be. Everybody has to have lighthouses in their life. As a Christian, and if these people are or not, if they are, Christians know that your values are set. You have to line up to those lighthouses. And even if you're not a Christian, not everybody listens to the show as a Christian, but they still have values in her life. She said, my question that she should be faced with, what are your values? I would think even in a lady like this, she knows her values are her marriage, her children, her family. Most women get that. You don't have to be a devout Christian to get that. The problem is she's overwhelmed with her emotions at this point. What she needs to be hearing from a counselor is your emotions are not your defining thing. The emotions are the wind that blows you off course. The emotions are the waves that crash around you and the currents that are getting you all goofed up. If you tie in, see, that's the problem with modern counseling. They get them to focus on the winds and the waves and the currents. Well, you got to be honest with the current. No, you don't. You need to focus on what's solid. Because no matter what the wind does and everything else, the homing beacons or whatever that you're going to focus on to navigate to always stay the same.
It's that's the feelings that distract you from your values.
Yeah, and but problem with counseling is what? They don't
focus. They want you to know how you feel and be true to your feelings and follow your heart.
If I'm flying off course, you know, I'm calling a controller trying to get on course. He says, well, you know, where the wind's blowing you,
yes.
You know.
What is it? What feels right to you, Mark? Which direction do you want to fly in?
What? You got to kind of go with the winds. I'm going to wind up in Canada. I wanted to go to Chicago.
Yeah.
You know. Actually, I'd rather be in Canada than Chicago. But anyway, so I don't know if that's helpful or not. But your problem is she needs to focus on what are her values, and then work through the values and the winds and the waves and everything that's screaming at her emotions. All that can be worked through, but they can't possibly work through. If you don't focus on the things that don't change, it's the things that don't change that have to be focused on when the winds are knocking you all over the place. Bless you again. All right, we'll take a break and we'll be back with more right after this.
Have a marriage dilemma? Email your questions to ask@markgunger.com and Mark can answer them during one of our shows.
So you call up the preacher and the marriage counselor too, and they don't have an answer. No, no, here's what you can do.
You can call the Mark Gunger Show, or actually you email the Mark Gunger Show. Find your answers that way. What do you got?
Okay, honey, hang on for this one.
Honey?
Am I weird? Well, that's just what I call everybody.
Oh, it's because you're getting old.
I know. You use sweetie,
you
I use honey.
Sweetie, honey. You I remember as a kid, yeah, running into old people, they always called sweetie. Why are you calling, yeah, me? And now I find myself, yeah, saying, hey,
I call
sweetie,
everybody honey.
Hey, sweetie. Hi, honey. It's like, it's an old thing.
Yeah.
Someday
it's
Phil will be doing
that. Old person thing.
He doesn't think he will. But at some point in his life, he's going to be,
hi, sweetie. Can
hey,
I help you?
At least I've got some time.
I just added another grandchild to my life this morning, so
that's
I
right
am officially old.
So you are. You're a geezerette.
I can use the word honey.
That's right. You did. All right.
Okay. She says, am I weird to feel okay to let my husband have a woman friend or girlfriend?
Uh-huh.
We're in our late 50s. We've been married 31 years.
Is it weird to feel okay that he has a girlfriend?
Mm-hmm. We've been married 31 years without any cheating on his part and have an amazing marriage, grown children, and wonderful sex life. I feel I don't own him, and he needs to have a woman friend or friends to keep him young. I know I'm allowing him to play with fire, but I believe that he should have safe and amazing fun times, including sex, if he wants, and of course be aware of the consequences. I don't want any manipulated feelings of wanting to stay beside me. I feel he should make that decision, but is it okay to allow him? And of course, it begs the obvious question, are you committed Christians and active in your local church? And she says, yes, they are.
I'm sure.
And they
are
committed to staying together with each other. But okay, this is her question.
Okay. She needs to stick her head in the toilet and give herself
a chicken.
Where's the chicken? Just when you try to look for the right
chicken
button. A flushy. You should take your chicken and flush your chicken along with your head in the toilet. Okay, this is so stupid. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. She's emailing the wrong guy. Anybody who writes me and thinks it's okay for my husband to have girlfriends and have sex with them,
and I'm okay
so
with
she can
it
say, am I weird? Okay, let's answer her question. Yes! Yes! You are weird. You need help. There's something wrong with you. And I don't know what you think a devout Christian is, but I'm pretty sure you're not it, okay? Because devout Christian women don't come to the conclusion, you know, it's okay if my husband can screw other women so that he can stay young. Oh, my goodness. This is dysfunctional on so many levels. I can't even think of it. You just, honestly, you stumbled accidentally across the wrong show. I'm glad you did. You know, maybe it's a Google thing. You know, you find different psychos out there.
Yeah. So,
but this is the wrong show, all right? We are assuming, I don't know, my wife has a problem with me having girlfriends and would look very negatively upon me screwing other women. Although that would be I just want to stay young.
Stay young. Come on. Just want to stay young.
I just want to get venereal diseases so I can die in pain. Oh, my goodness. All right, we'll change that subject. We'll see you in just a second after this break.
Caution, the Mark Unger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience.
Feelings got me down. You know, sometimes you wonder if people ask us, are these emails real? And I don't know. I presume this is a real email or someone's messing with our heads. But here's a woman who emails us, says, you know, am I weird because it's okay for my husband? I thought she's going to say, you know, just have friends who are women. I said, well, yeah, you know, you're smart about it. Like, but no. Her version of women is it's okay for me to have sex with them. And then, yeah, we're devout Christians and we're dedicated to our marriage. Well, I don't think so. I don't know what you think. And Phil says, where'd you get that kind of idea? I think, you know, if you hang with people that think that way, you need some new friends. Because that is about as dysfunctional as you can possibly get. The idea of marriage is a sexually exclusive relationship. If you're committed to your marriage, it's not okay for your spouse to have sex with other people. And we just assume most people know this. Apparently she doesn't.
Well,
I hope
last
that doesn't
night,
become the standard after a while.
Last night, your wife and I were watching television together. And just because Jordan Rogers, Aaron Rogers' brother, is on The Bachelorette, we flipped it on and we watched it. That's the first time I've ever watched a whole episode of that show. And it's the last time I watch a whole episode of that show. Talk about dysfunction. And then following that immediately,
in our church who
watch the offense
show.
To all of you who watch
names.
It. And then immediately following that, the show Mistresses came on, which I have seen advertised but have never watched. And we watched a good share of that until you came in and interrupted it. But we sat there staring at each other, saying, this is ridiculous. No wonder there's such crazy, whacked out thinking in the world, because there are people, unlike some lovely women who can watch this and discern between crazy and reality, there are people, ladies, that watch that, and men, I suppose, and think that that's normal.
This is normal.
And it was
crazy.
There's
no question the version of normal is getting more and more skewed. That's why I just said, I hope this isn't the new normal. That people actually think, you know, I want to keep my husband young and energetic, so it's okay for him to go out and have girlfriends and have sex with other women. But first of all, there might be a temporary young energy that comes from that. Mm-hmm. But this is the reason why society and virtually every religion on earth opposes this behavior is because it's destructive. Your husband will not, at the end of the day, have more energy or be in a better place with you. And again, I mean, just the risk of venereal diseases or who knows what. But there's no way you do this and maintain a normal relationship. This is what destroys relationships. It's like, you know, is it okay if I snort cocaine, you know, because I get a little tired in the afternoon and need a little boost of energy, you know, or, you know, I get a headache at night. Is it okay if I shoot heroin because it really takes care of that? I mean, no, it's not, but it helps. Yeah, it probably does. It'll also kill you. Mm-hmm. That's what these sexual things do. They have a temporary effect that seems to be quite effective.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he would feel quite young and flattered and this and that.
I'm sure.
Hooking up with some young girl,
yeah.
I'm sure.
50-year-old guy having sex with a 25-year-old, I bet you he's quite energized.
Yeah.
There's apparently a following of Christians who believe this and teach it. I just did a Google search swingers for Christ out of curiosity.
Oh, yeah. We've had the articles. We've read them before on the show.
Oh, my goodness.
There's a lot of dysfunction out there.
Yeah. And then people say, well, why the Bible? You know, they twist the Bible and stuff like that. But forget all that for a second.
Sorry.
No. I appreciate you bringing that out. There's people who think in these ways and they have their arguments. But at the end of the day, it's destructive. Mm-hmm. And all you got to do is sit back and just wait. I mean, it's like, literally, I have a headache. I'm going to take some heroin because it really gets rid of my headache. It does. I mean, I've never taken heroin, but I bet you it's really effective. I have a sore knee, and the heroin really helps.
It
takes care of all your knee problems. All your pains go away. The problem, it will kill you. Or I need more energy. I'm going to snort coke because they say, I don't know, I've never done it, that this is like, oh, you're so alive, and this is like, the problem is that it eventually kills you. That's why there's laws against it. That's why society's against it. That's why any religion or anybody with any kind of standard would say you shouldn't do this kind of stuff. And you have people like this lady who doesn't get that, or these groups that don't get that. But I promise anybody who gets into swinging, it's This doesn't end well. It never ends well.
Well, we read an article the one time about the husband and wife that had the swingers, Christian swingers groups, and they just thought it opened up a whole new pathway for evangelism because then they could share the gospel with people that normally probably wouldn't hear it. That was their rationalization.
Well, listen, there's a version of, if your version of evangelism is just to get somebody to say, yeah, Jesus is cool. You know, because my guess is I could have parties and drunken fits,
sure.
And man, all these people come over. You know, I'm going to evangelize.
Woo-hoo,
you.
Jesus is great.
Jesus is cool, and you want another token? You know, cocaine. I mean, you can have all kinds of wild parties for Jesus if that's your version of following Jesus. But you're the true version of following Jesus. You deny yourself. You say no to your desires and your flesh. That's not nearly as popular. Wild orgies. Snorting coke. But people who engage in this behavior, it's destructive to them. They don't, it never ends well. So anyway, very odd. All right, what else you got?
Okay, the next email's from a guy. He says, I would like to start off by saying that my wife and I have a successful marriage.
Okay.
We are both strong in our faith and committed to one another. We have been married for almost 10 years. She's my best friend. She's a very strong type A personality.
I hear a butt coming on.
I, on the other hand, am a great follower. Do you think people can change their personality traits? If so, could you recommend any Christian authors that deal with men and low self-esteem?
He said she's a great leader and he's a great follower.
Yeah.
So what?
But apparently that causes problems for his self-esteem. He says it's affecting his marriage.
Well, then he's not a great follower. Great followers are very content to follow. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense. His thing doesn't make sense.
Someone told him he's supposed to be a leader.
I bet you that's it.
Yeah, so he has to lead.
That's it.
Well, the Bible says he's supposed to be the leader. No, it really doesn't. It says the husband is the head of the wife, just like Christ is the head of the church. But Christ doesn't do everything in the church. You know, he's not cleaning the church this weekend, and he's not doing the music, and he's not preparing. I mean, you know, he's still the head, and we want his spirit to influence and empower us. But, you know, this idea of being the head means you have to do everything is not true at all.
So he thinks he's lacking in confidence.
I don't know what he's talking
self-esteem.
About.
Self-esteem?
I don't know what he's talking about, honestly. I'm not being smart, Alec. What he's saying doesn't make sense. I'm a good follower. I like my wife likes to lead, and I'm a good follower. People say, well, that's unbiblical. I don't know. At some point, as scripturally, he needs to be responsible for what happens in the home, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he has to take charge of everything. Here's an analogy. I've given this many times, but when Joseph came to Egypt, he was so favored by Pharaoh. Pharaoh put him in charge of everything in Egypt. The Bible says there was not anything in Egypt that Joseph was not responsible for. But who was the Pharaoh?
Pharaoh.
Did Joseph ever become the Pharaoh? No. Did anybody ever confuse Joseph for the Pharaoh? See, in Western culture, because in Eastern culture, you are who you are, and you're respected for who you are, not based on what you do. The problem with Western culture, we think what you do depends, elevates you for who you are, and we have it backwards. If people in Western culture would have gone to Egypt at that time and say, well, man, Joseph, you ought to be the Pharaoh. Let's get rid of the Pharaoh. That's exactly what we think. You know what? Pharaoh doesn't do anything. But that's not the way it works. Real authority isn't based on what you do. If your wife does everything, and I'm sure that's what he means by leading, if she does everything, doesn't mean that he's not still the husband of the home. I know this really messes with people, because a lot of women, because they listen to too many other programs, that push us, man has to do everything, he has to be the spiritual leader of the home, which the Bible never says. A man should handle all the important things of the home, the Bible never says. A man should lead all the efforts of the home, the Bible never says. Doesn't say those things. It just says that he's the head. And as the head means that you're responsible. It's like the president of the United States. When the president of the United States, or the guy that owns your company, a lot of guys who own companies, they don't know anything about how to make the things in their company. Mm-hmm. Who do you think knows more about the army when the president walks into a meeting with the military? The military does. The president's always the dumbest guy. Any president is always the dumbest guy in the room. He doesn't do everything. A lot of times they don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
What do these guys do? What do they make? They don't do anything. What they have to do is they are responsible. They got to make sure they got the right people in the right place who then do stuff. And others actually take over and make stuff. They have to inspire. They have to make the calls. But, you know, to say, well, you know, president, he should be the one who actually gets out there and marches the army around into battle. No. You know, well, he's the leader. Yes. Doesn't mean he has to do everything. So I just think a lot of this leading stuff is out of whack. I think if your wife by nature is the one who knows how to handle the finances and sets this and stuff like that, and you're content with that, then you should be content with that. Is there a way to change your personality traits? No, actually, there's not. There's a way that you can mature and grow in your faith and as a person. But you got a fun person. I don't, you know, a person like me. Is there a way I can change where I become really a detailed perfectionist? No. Is there someone who's a real control person who thinks can I become just a real peaceful person? I don't care what anything happens. No. He's a real peaceful, oriented guy, and he feels that there's something wrong and is messing with his self-esteem. I think you need to get comfortable with yourself. You should go to my website, flagpage.com. Flagpage.com, take the test. It'll give you a picture of who you are. A lot of people are just not comfortable with who they are. And I think he needs to get comfortable with who he is. His idea of leadership and what's proper and stuff, that where it's messing with his self-esteem, I just think is all jacked up. What he's saying is kind of confusing. Anyway, there you have it. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Want more of Mark? Visit markgunger.com. There you will find everything that Mark has to offer.
Well, now please don't give me all that lip. Stop acting like you are so hip. You know you want it. Yes, you can. You want a bologna sandwich, man. So come on.
Here's the Mark Gunger Show. If you're looking for baloney, you've come to the right place. What do you got?
Okay, he says, I'm a big fan of your show and a proud Gungorian. I am confused about the term wait in the Bible, especially Isaiah 64:4, which says basically in the last half of the verse that God acts on behalf of those who wait for him. I will read that verse to you in a moment. This is the verse many pastors and single class teachers use as a reference for waiting for a mate. What is your opinion on the verse when it comes to finding a spouse? The verse says, no one has heard, no ear has perceived, no eye has seen any God besides you who acts on behalf of those who wait for him.
Well, I think you should not be impulsive and wait. Let's change the couples thing. Let's say you want a job and you're going to make a career and stuff. You should pray about it as a Christian and, you know, be open to God's directing and leading. But at some point, you need to go apply for a job. For a pastor to say, no, man, just stay home. Just wait. Just wait. God will bring you a job. God will bring you. See, everybody listening to that right now knows it's stupid. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, when it comes to spouses and marriage, everybody thinks it's brilliant. It's not. It's still stupid to say, you know, if you want to get married and stuff, you know, you just need to wait. Don't be nervous. Just wait. God will bring you a spouse. It's stupid. It's as stupid as, I've lost my glasses. What should I do? Well, just wait on the Lord. Well, don't you think I should go look for my, can you help me? No, I don't want to get a hold of God. I just, you know, I need to pay my bills. No, listen, I think you ought to wait.
Just wait.
Really, I think they're going to get mad if I don't pay my... Listen, you don't want to get hold of the Lord. You just need to wait. You know? I think on Sunday morning, your pastor goes to the service on time. What if someone said, Pastor, no. You need to wait. Mm-hmm. Just don't get hold of the Lord. Just sit and wait. And, you know, when it's time, you know, you'll know. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's all... For some, it's ridiculous. You take in any area of life, it's stupid thinking. It's just plain stupid thinking. But when it comes to marriage and finding a spouse, suddenly it becomes the gold standard in Christianity. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, it's stupid everywhere else, and it's still stupid there. Should you wait? Should you ask God? Should you pray about things? Absolutely. But you have to act. You have to go. You have to find someone. That's why the Bible says, he who finds a wife, a woman of noble character, who can find. That means you have to go looking. Oh, but Pastor, these girls say, I want like Ruth and Boaz. Have you ever read Ruth and Boaz? The whole thing was rigged by the women who went out and found. They nabbed Boaz. They literally went after him. In fact, we just did a thing in church about that. If you read the story, people, read it, okay? She, because it goes against this thing, well, girls should just wait for the guy to pursue. She's the one who pursued him. She is the one who asked him to marry her. Mm-hmm. People don't read this stuff. They just listen to people say, no, don't do anything and just wait, like Ruth and Boaz. Only Christians can quote the Bible to make a point that is the exact opposite of what the Bible says. It's like saying, you know, you should never get baptized. Okay? You really shouldn't go in the water. You really shouldn't get baptized. And to prove that is where Jesus says, go into all the world and baptize everybody. It doesn't make any sense. He says you should be baptized. But when it comes to marriage, they're always quoting stuff that is the exact opposite of what the Bible says. Mm-hmm. So my answer to you is, yeah, it's just stupid. You know, I'm sure you have a wonderful pastor. He's just wrong. He's just wrong. And, you know, the thing is if enough people say the wrong thing over and over again, everybody thinks it's right. And I don't blame any pastor at this point because most pastors don't focus much on marriage and relationships. They're just trying to get through from one day to the other. They're just repeating everything they've heard over and over again. When you stop and get these guys to think, they almost always will agree, yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I never thought about it. I'd love to have the conversation with your pastor. I'm sure, probably at the end of the day, it wouldn't take very long, a 10, 15-minute conversation, he would agree with me. It's absurd. What he's saying, it sounds spiritual, is just ridiculous and absurd. So anyway, in general, yes, let the Lord guide and direct you. Don't be impulsive. Don't run off and do stupid things. That's what the Bible, but it doesn't mean literally sit around and don't do anything.
And wait.
Wait doesn't mean don't do anything. There's a lot of people who don't accomplish anything in the kingdom of God. They're going to stand before God on judgment day and have nothing to show for their lives because, well, I was just waiting. My pastor said to wait.
It sounds like they come up with that verse and that thinking, maybe not because they think that's really how you find someone, but more as a they're trying to calm these single people who are freaking out or feel bad or something. And so they kind of add that on as an ointment to like, just relax, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I get that. But I think some of these should be freaking out and panicking. They're 35 years old, they still don't have anybody. Why? Because they've been listening to this insanity. You need to go out and make something happen. These girls get all stressed out. I know pastors will never let me back in their church just because I made the single girls all upset. So I try to avoid what singles talk when I travel now. I talk about it on my show. I preach it at my church. It's so against the standard teaching in the church. It's just, you know, God, at some point you have to, what has God asked you to do? I'm there to talk about marriages. I go to talk about marriage. I stay away from single things by and large because it gets everybody so mad. I think what these people are doing, these girls do get all upset. Because they've been told the Lord's going to bring you a husband. You know how many churches are full of girls in their late 30s and early 40s who've been told all this time not to do anything, the Lord will bring them a husband, and they have no husband. And these pastors are freaking. These girls are upset. I think at some point they're going to break out in riots in these churches and go tar and feather these pastors. They should be tarred and feathered. Good grief. You've been telling them nonsense all these years. So, and I agree with Phil. I think that there will just be way they are probably trying to calm mm-hmm. because I think they're finding all this resistance now because what they've said isn't true. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like someone
just trying to make them feel better.
It's like someone who doesn't have a job and I can't pay him. Well, just wait on at some point you're going to fight back. You're going to kick it against it.
And think about it. It makes sense. If you don't have the answer to the solution, then what do you try and do? You just try and fix the
symptom.
It's
like the just pray about it answer because they don't know what to say. Exactly.
I don't know what to tell you to fix your situation.
Just wait, so just pray,
well, at least
trust
just don't
God.
Feel bad about it. Yeah.
No, you're right. Pray about it is the standard answer. When someone tells you to pray about it, what they're saying is, I'm a dummy and I don't know anything and I don't know how to answer. That's their answer. It sounds spiritual. Mm-hmm. It's not so spiritual to say, you know, I'm a dummy, I'm a moron, I don't know anything about what you're talking about. That is not most people's answer. But when someone, what is reading?
You.
That's your computer.
Oh, sorry. I should shut that off. I'll shut it off. There you go. Oh, that was you.
Oh, okay. Timmy.
So it's Timmy's.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So that's Timmy's fault. You know, it's not very popular to say I'm a moron and I don't know what I'm talking about. So rather than people admitting that they're morons and don't know what they're talking about, they say, well, we'll pray about it. Anybody who their only answer, I think you should pray about things, but they can't give you any advice. What they're saying is, I don't know. I guess moron's a little extreme. I speak in extremes.
Well, they think that they're spiritual.
They're literally saying, I don't know. When anybody tells you their answers, we'll just pray about it. They're saying, I'm kind of dumb in this area, and I don't know. That's exactly what they're telling you. All right, we'll take a break because I'm a dummy and I don't know what else to say. We'll take a break. We'll be back with hopefully more right after this.
Attend Mark's Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage event. Visit laughyourway.com for upcoming dates and locations.
I that left us bronzed and breathless, then melted into night.
If you're breathless too long,
I'll never forget,
you die.
As long as
or at least pass out.
You make me so breathless. Well, really, you need to breathe. Michael O'Brien, what do you got?
She says, I've been dating my boyfriend for a little over 2 years. We have a great time together and are really able to be ourselves. Mm-hmm. We knew almost right away that we wanted to get married, but there were some things like money, school, and maturing that we had to do first.
Nonsense, nonsense, and nonsense.
It's been 2.5 years and I'm ready to get married. We both have good jobs and have grown up a lot. I'm 24, he's 26. His parents, my parents, and all our friends are excited for us to tie the knot, but he's still scared and making excuse after excuse. We are both virgins and looking forward to being intimate. I am getting pretty tired of being so in love and unable to act on this love. Mm-hmm. I know he loves me because he has really become a selfless, gentle, sensitive, caring guy. When mm-hmm. we have disagreements, we work them out and end up able to laugh about them after a few days. And sometimes he looks at me and I know he's excited to spend the rest of our lives together. So why won't he just get hitched? I don't know how to help him make the jump.
The problem is the way you're letting him treat you. The next time he wants to go out, tell him no. The next time he says, well, let's go go to dinner. No, I got to wash my goldfish. Hey, you want to meet Saturday? You know, I'd love to, but I got to comb my hair. You know, I mean, just whatever. Do it. I promise you. Do it for 2 weeks. And if he doesn't ask you to marry you by the end of 2 weeks, I'll give you your money back. I'm telling you. I've done it before for other girls, and it turns them around. Mm-hmm. The problem is you're too accessible. Why would he have to marry you? You go with him wherever he wants to go, and he gets to hang, and you spend time together, and you cuddle, and you flirt and stuff, and he gets to have you, but yet still feed into his fears and paranoia. You just basically let him know, you know, if we're not going to be serious about this, then, and really, you don't want to waste time. How old did she say she is?
24, and he's 26.
Yeah, you're going to spend another 5 years dicking around with this guy, then he's eventually going to dump you anyway because he's fearful. Now you're not going to have all that youth and energy. Now you're going to waste 5 years. You'll do it again, waste another 5 years. You're going to be one of these 35-year-old girls, 40-year-old girls that are still single. Don't put up. Next time he has to go out, don't do it. Just say no. Well, how come? No, I'm just kind of busy. I promise you, it'll jerk the slack out of him. You girls are too easy. You're too accessible. Watch what happens. I promise you. I expect an email back from this girl. She needs to do this. Do this for, like, if you got to do it for a month, but I promise you, it's usually 2 weeks, 10 days. It'll jerk the slack out of him, and he'll get serious. Quit being so accessible. All right, see ya.
Bye, bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.